right, so we're just discussing a great night at the Players Championship last night, Veterans Night, kicking off the week with a John Party concert. Had a little dirt on my boots, don't anymore.
Marines, Air Force, all the guys hanging around the green. They gave a car out to a nice gentleman.
Yep, it was really cool. They always do an awesome job. Great show. It was an amazing event.
Very patriotic.
An amazing place. Very patriotic. You know, F-16s flying over, which always rocks your world. It's awesome. But happy hump day. Wanted to bring up the fact, before we get going with everything today, that we have one more show this week, which is tomorrow. And then we're going to be off Friday and all of next week. We will return on Monday, March 25th, and already have a huge lineup of guests for you that week. So just wanted to put that out there. If you're looking for us next week, go watch some of the older shows, older episodes, watch some of the clips, and be sure to share with your friends. But for today, it's National Canine Veterans Day, so shout out or bark out or whatever to those fine dogs who do such amazing work for our country. And they really do. You know, there's a lot more emphasis on them now. And I think people are more aware of them now, but what they do overseas is amazing and are critical to operations on so many fronts, from security to, you know, direct action type operations, you know, the full gamut. So
we have Canines for Warriors right down the road. So big supporter. So
absolutely. Great show. Sticking with the veteran theme, our friend, veteran, and the man behind the band Three Beards, Hank Barb, will be here. Also, owner of Hill Farms New Mexico, photographer, public speaker, Jay Hill will join us again. So great show. We've got to get to all that. But before we get going with the headlines, I just saw this earlier today. Some of you might have seen it last week, but I thought the video was great. And to preface the whole thing, U.S. Representative Mark Walker out of North Carolina released the following statement on H.R. 1, the For the People Act of 2019. He said this, quote, "While Republicans remain committed to producing results, our colleagues across the aisle seem only interested in retaining power and resisting productivity. In an attempt to legislate electoral advantages for their candidates, House Democrats are attempting to force North Carolina taxpayers to pay for campaign ads for California politicians. Instead of counting ballots from the Capitol, the new House majority should be counting the number of people who will be hurt by their policies that will cost $600,000 per household and make private health insurance illegal." On that same thread, he tweeted this. Disco, I think we've got the tweet. "Do you like campaign ads? Well, HR1 will take your money and give it to the politicians so they can run TV ads. That's hashtag for the politicians, not hashtag for the people." You can see in the tweet there the picture of then this video that he dumped out, which was just a gem of a satire campaign ad. Let's take a look.
"Oh, hey there. I'm a politician attempting to do human things so that I look relatable. You know how you hate political ads? Well, guess what? You're paying for this one. This week, House Democrats will pass H.R. 1. They're calling it the For the People Act, but really, it's for my campaign consultants. You know, I work hard, and you should too, because H.R. 1 is going to take your hard-earned tax dollars and millions more and send them to my campaign so I can put ads on TV. So as I use buzzwords like for the people, just remember, with H.R. 1, hardworking Americans will get hammered into paying for bad campaign ads like this one.
I approve this message, but you paid for it."
I love it. I love the axe swinging. Just one thrust.
One thrust. And then tired. Yeah. I mean, kudos to his staff for coming up with and being clever enough to do an ad like that. I thought it was great. Just good stuff. Good stuff. But for now, now that we've gotten that out of the way and given our kudos to the Walker staff, let's take a trip across the headlines.
Yeah, let's do it.
So here's we just announced it already. We've been talking about Beto O'Rourke forever. So he's headed to Iowa, but still won't definitively say that he's running for president in 2020. Analysts expect Beto to announce his decision on a White House bid before the end of the month. He'll be in Waterloo, Iowa this weekend to campaign on Saturday on behalf of Democratic State Senator candidate Eric Giddens. On Monday night, Giddens released a video of O'Rourke wearing a University of Northern Iowa hat, who has a good football program, by the way, and encouraging students to support him in his upcoming race. So first off, I don't understand how people such as Beto, who lost his Senate bid, have so much clout. Like, they really do. Like, it's fascinating to me. You lost, but he's like a front runner. So I'm not trying to pick on him. I'm not saying that to be mean. I just honestly don't get it. Like, he hasn't won anything and other than his state role that he had there in Texas. But for some, they think he's the great young hope. So it just it blows.
You can't call him the Great White Hope.
You can't call him the Great White Hope. No.
Nope, because
that's racist.
That's racist.
Yes.
But just people think he's young and handsome. He's got charisma.
Yeah.
What are you
going to
do? That's what you vote people for. Young, handsome, and charisma.
Yeah. And he's got an interesting name. Ooh, Beto. I've heard of his name. Yeah, that Beto guy. I'm going
to
vote for him.
But just keep adding him on to the primary. Just keep bringing people in.
Keep doing it. And Schultz, keep your ass in the race. You keep running.
And Biden, by the way, just wrote a knockout there the other day. He's like, I'm going to need this energy you know, coming up in the next couple of weeks. So I think the hat's been thrown in.
I think the hat's been thrown in, too, for sure. Speaking of that, real quick, too, and speaking of folks who lost their race before we move on, failed gubernatorial candidate in Florida, Andrew Gillum, is teasing a big announcement on March 20th.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he's going to say something on March 20th. We don't know what it is. I don't know what else he would say other than he's not running for office in 2020 or that he's admitted that he's going to jail on an
or
FBI
I'm going to raise taxes across the U.S. for millions and millions of dollars like he wanted in Florida.
I will say this. He's charismatic. He's a handsome guy, and he's just got an energy around him that was terrifying
young,
being here in Florida. Yes.
Handsome.
Yeah. Same thing. Exactly. Same as Beto. They look very different. We'll let you figure out why. But
racist.
But then also I was trying to I was just looking it up real quick while we were saying this that Beto is just his nickname. His first name is actually Robert. So
Bob.
Yeah. Old Bobby O'Rourke.
Old Bob.
Sounds like a good IRA fella. Which is, by the way, a great organization. I feel like we've got to get back to. I mean, how good of a movie was Patriot Games?
Yes,
Wait,
I know
you
that
we're say getting. You got to get back to bombings.
I mean, let's do it. Like this is fun stuff.
So I guess my question would be: is how would his name show up on the ballot? Would it be Robert O'Rourke or Beto? And
it's got to be Robert O'Rourke.
If people only know him as Beto, they go in there.
That's
they're like,
true.
He wasn't on the ballot.
Beto didn't even run.
He didn't even show up.
Yeah,
like he got no votes.
That's a good. Half of the people in this country would be confused by that, sadly. Like,
I was there for his campaign. I donated.
Yeah.
But he wasn't even on the ballot.
Where's Bob?
No, I guess with the IRA, obviously I don't want like innocents to be killed by car bombs in like public squares over there in Europe. But it just was like great movies came from that era. Great
Patriot, like you said, Patriot Games is a really good movie.
One of my favorite movies ever. Just a great movie. But, so moving on, we'll get back on track here. This was big. It'll go nowhere, but former FBI legal counsel Lisa Page testified to Congress that the Justice Department ordered the FBI not to charge former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton with gross negligence, as they called it, by mishandling classified information. Transcripts of Page's closed-door testimony in July 2018 were released earlier this week by Representative Doug Collins on Tuesday, which included the following exchange, which I think we've got here, between Ratcliffe and Page. Disco, if we could bring that up. You can see here Ratcliffe saying, so let me, if I can, I know I'm testing your memory, but when you say advice you got from the department, you're making it sound like it was the department that told you, pretty much quote here, you're not going to charge gross negligence because we're the prosecutors and we're telling you we're not going to. Page said that is correct. He continued on bring a case based on that. So this whole thing has come out and it's basically looking like and if you look into the situation further, you can see that it looks like it came from the Obama administration saying, hey, we're not going to charge Hillary. And that's the concern that's coming out right now is that there was some favors being done. And of course, there was also the statement by Comey that there was no precedence. But basically, she came out and confirmed that the Department of Justice, led by Attorney General Loretta Lynch at the time, had multiple conversations about charging Clinton with gross negligence, but noted that it would be a rare decision. They did not feel it could sustain a charge, she said, referring to the Department of Justice. President Trump reacted to all this, the news that came out. Examiner and Breitbart and several others have run this story. Here was his tweet on the matter. The just revealed FBI agent Lisa Page transcripts make the Obama Justice Department look exactly like it was, a broken and corrupt machine. Hopefully justice will finally be served. Much more to come. So we'll see if he digs his heels into this. I think nothing is going to come of it. The only thing that's going to come, sadly, is more, you know, faux investigations into the president
ding,
himself,
ding,
but
ding, ding, ding. I
but
think you just nailed it right there.
I like getting bells. Can we get like an actual bell in here?
Sure. Disco? I mean, we can try. Yeah.
I'd like to hire bells. Someone named Diane too. I don't know
just
why.
Back in the corner over there somewhere.
But I'd like to have a Diane.
Okay. Diane, ring that bell.
Yes. So we've discussed Tucker Carlson this week and how Media Matters has gone after him for comments on Bubba Love Sponge like more than a decade ago, right? I think it was like 2006, a long time ago. Well, something Media Matters president Angelo Corazon may not want you to know is that he too, like all of us, have said things that we regret before. How about that? We all say stupid things in our life. Again, I say it every day, but news reports show that Corazon has his own track record of inflammatory statements. His now defunct blog included degrading references to trannies, Jewry, and Bangladeshis. Corazon posted a lengthy diatribe in November of 2005 about a Bangladeshi man who was robbed by a gang of transvestites. This was said in the article, "Did you notice the word attractive? What the F is that doing in there? Is the writer a tranny lover too? Or perhaps he's trying to justify how these trannies
hit
Bangladeshi in the first place. Look, man, we don't need to know whether or not they were attractive. The effing guy was Bangladeshi." Corazon also chided police for not advising the public to stay away from tranny bars, stay away from places where Eddie Murphy and Robert Downey Jr. have or are visiting. Don't effing kiss a transvestite. Don't bring a group of transvestites back to your room, etc. Again, cast the first stone if you're perfect. Oh, you aren't.
I guess
perfect.
He doesn't like trannies. Huh?
Yeah, I guess he doesn't like trannies. So, yeah. No, I mean, bottom line, shut up, man. I mean, if you have no dirt on yourself and you are the perfect individual, by all means, judge away. But,
and this
but,
is the dude from Media Matters, right?
This is the president of Media Matters.
And which is a 501c3 organization, by the way.
Is it?
Using tax-free tax dollars to, as many people are saying, promote these issues out there. And we're all paying for them.
Yeah.
So that was a new little tidbit that came out. That, well, it didn't come out, but if they're using it, they're a tax-free organization.
Yeah.
Tax-exempt.
Well, sounds like an audit is due.
No. They will never touch me.
No, they won't. They definitely won't. So we're all familiar with Yelp. Well, there's now a new app similar to it. Essentially, functions as a Yelp for conservatives and helps users find local restaurants and businesses that won't get political. Scott Wallace created the 63Red Safe app after a series of Republican lawmakers and members of the Trump administration were harassed in public. We, you know, we all remember those. You had Huckabee Sanders. You had so many of them. The Red Hen was, of course, that big one. Yeah, lots of shame chants. He said, quote, "We feel like there's a general unease among conservatives out there about whether they'll be protected and safe when they go out to restaurants and local businesses." He said that the goal isn't to find places that are conservative or pro-Trump, but rather just those that lack a political bent, just places where you can go eat a meal. Oh, what a crazy concept.
Good figure, right?
Yeah,
a restaurant.
Mean, yeah, that's what a restaurant is, huh?
Yeah.
Crazy. I'd like some chips and salsa and for you to keep your politics out of this booth. So
unreal.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Good for them.
So good for them. San Diego State University, this is not as cool, is planning to host a racial healing workshop for minority students and faculty later this month that aims to help students and professors of color get through college and career life, you know, because it's rough out there.
Yeah, it is rough.
It's rough. After all, I mean, we've got Nigerians with nooses and bleach running around, attacking their own people in sub-degree weather, sub-zero weather. But no, so they're doing this whole workshop, sit down, whatever you want to call it. And according to the Marriage and Family Therapy Association, quote, "This intimate 1.5-hour racial healing workshop, catered to students and faculty of color, will be led by well-known professional Dr. Cheryl E. Matias, however you say it. The event's online description states, she will provide a safe space for students and faculty of color to discuss the issues that impact persons of color in higher academia. Dr. Matias will facilitate group healing, and she will provide tools to help people of color, or POC, navigate radicalized spaces such as higher education and professional fields." Honestly, though, excuse me, my whole thing is this all really necessary? Like, I know there's no white days on campuses where, you know, that we talk about all the time at Evergreen, I think it was, right?
Evergreen,
you know, where whites are supposed to not come on campus. To leave. You've had these groups have all these meetings. We talked about the University of Toronto meeting, who was kind of similar, but no whites were even allowed to attend. So it was its own kind of segregation happening there. But I just don't, and I'm not one. I get it. I'm very white, very, very Viking, very pale. Just born that way. Didn't choose it. This is just who I am and how I am. But things are pretty good in this country. Like,
well, the whole problem I have with this, and I think we talked about this yesterday for a second, me and you, was they're inclusive, right? They're having their own business, their own little community mm-hmm. there with people of color, professors and students, right?
Right.
To gain knowledge of how to navigate this world of academia, you know, in colleges. But you're not allowing other people of color, hence white people,
right,
to come and discuss these views with you. So you are locking everybody out, and you're advocating for your own agenda. And this is how us as people of color are going to deal with white people or other people of color. So don't let them in.
Right.
We're going to come up with our own thing. How is that? This is our institutes of higher learning. We're going to get into a lot more.
Our institutes, yeah.
Our institutes, institutions of higher learning.
Yeah.
It's
ridiculous. Well, it just creates the us versus them mentality. We've got enough of that. We don't need more us versus them right. mentality. Things. Look, we've done some stupid things in this country with people of different ethnicities, color, et cetera. We've fixed a lot of that. There's a lot of social injustices that still happen, no doubt. We're not perfect. But go anywhere else, and you'll see the comparison is pretty stark, and it's pretty damn good here. So
right.
so driving the wedge further and creating this whole victim thing, I think just – look, let's have productive conversations, but let's have them together and collectively. How do we improve? And let's only have them where it really, really matters, not just where it sounds cool to go and do this and talk about issues because it gives us something to do. Let's talk about it where they're really, because there's pockets of society where it's really needed, and at that point, absolutely.
Well, I hope I'm saying the right word, but they're causing their own oppression by doing this. They're singling themselves out because of doing this.
Right.
And that's what's – they're only hurting that, not helping.
Well, and there's a lot of folks in the black community who are prominent officials who have come out and said that exact thing. Like, things are awesome. Like, we've got a lot of things in the right way. Like, you guys are turning this into something that it's not, so stop. And again, that's not everyone. There are people who are dealing with some rough stuff. Very sorry. But generally speaking,
college campuses. This is the part that I was talking about. You're at college. You should be getting it. Their whole word is inclusivity.
Yeah.
You know, boom. Well, you're not anymore. That's not being inclusive of everybody else. And it's going around a dangerous path. And you saw one of those pictures there. You saw the seat said white only seat because that was their protest.
Yeah.
Because they're calling out white people.
Yeah.
You know, you're calling out white people now.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
There's the arrow that had just been chucked across the lawn.
Yep.
Okay, white people, you're the problem, so we're going to sit down and figure out how us people of color can deal with this.
Yeah.
That's infuriating to me.
Yeah,
because it is.
There's just no place for it. There's no place for it. And you're on a college campus. You're living a privileged life if you're on a college campus. So anyways, speaking of college campuses, let's move on because this gets way more absurd. And we're not even going to get to finish this here. We're actually going to do some of it in overtime today. But speaking of absurd behavior on college campuses, a group of activists, students at Sarah Lawrence College, are calling themselves the Diaspora Coalition, and they've released a long list of demands.
Mm-hmm.
College students listing some demands. After occupying the campus's main administrative building for 24 hours, which sounds a lot like trespassing to me and probably several other laws that are broken, one of these demands concerns Samuel Abrams, a tenured professor of politics. Abram is a conservative-leaning and professor and has complained about ideological bias of leftist administrators in New York Times. He did that in a New York Times op-ed, excuse me. And because of this, his office door was vandalized last November by unknown persons who wanted him to apologize to marginalized students and then quit the college altogether. So now the Diaspora Coalition is demanding that Sarah Lawrence review Abram's tenure. The review should be conducted by a panel consisting of members of, you guessed it, the Diaspora Coalition, as well as faculty members of color. These are just part of these. So let's take a look at some others here. So literally this is, I mean, it's pages upon pages of demands, and they're a long list. Like, it's not like a couple bullet points.
11 pages.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
And I've highlighted for our viewing pleasure our overtime.
For our overtime.
The ones that I am just going to tear into.
Yeah, we're actually going to save these. So you got to catch overtime on social media. Go and watch it. It's free. It's easy. And we'll go through these. But what blows my mind is these people who, like you've seen at Evergreen, like you've seen at some of these schools, who shout and yell, you know, profanities at professors they don't agree with because they've been given no ability to have confrontation with people and do it in a productive and healthy manner. But they lock themselves in buildings. They, you know, you saw that at Evergreen too. They in this case, lock themselves in this building and make these demands. Like, this sounds mean, But you're young enough that your demands and opinions just don't really matter yet. So you making demands to it, you're up and coming. Mm-hmm. You're up and coming. But when you see how ridiculous these demands are, it proves the point further. But who the hell do you think you are that you trespass, lock yourself in a building, and then make these? I mean, this is like Hans Gruber in Die Hard.
Locking the doors and setting up shop, right? And I think for the audience out there is looking at those pictures with, you know, food and cafeteria. Well, one of their demands, and we'll get into this later, is must provide free meals for students who are staying on campus, you know, over winter break. Or provide halal, all these other food, you know. And I'm just saying, how about MREs? There's your answer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Then you won't need toilet paper.
Because, they won't say it because it's not organic and it's not, you know. We'll get into all that later, but that was that food thing going.
Chili Mac,
these
baby.
Are their demands. Up to 300 students get free meals, this and that, free this, free everything. And
free housing during
free
winter
housing.
Break.
Yep. Transportation. Yep. Oh, it's going to be fantastic. You got to tune into this.
It's going to be good. Overtime, tonight, social media, this list of demands, priceless. Kind of like the Green New Deal. It really is. It's in that same kind of vein. But for now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Hank Barb of Three Beards. See you on the other side. Welcome back, folks. Joining us now is someone we love who also has an incredible story. He's also an outstanding musician, if you haven't heard of him. Hank Barb is a U.S. Army veteran and the lead singer and man behind Three Beards, who have, by the way, appeared right here in studio on Happy Hour. And he joins us now. Hank, good to see you, man.
Hey, good to see you too, man. It's good to be on the show.
Absolutely. Well, we're glad to have you. So it's been a while since you've been here. It's been a while since we've caught up, you know, at least face-to-face here or digitally face-to-face, whatever we call this.
Right.
But what's going on with Three Beards? What are you guys up to? Are there any new songs, albums coming out? What's going on in the world of the band?
You know, we got a ton of stuff coming out. We just finished some new songs. We did a title track for a movie that's coming out in 2020 with our friend Justin Roberts. We made a music video, getting ready to make another music video. Getting ready to release the new music that we made and do a radio promotion. And then we got some huge shows this year too. So I'm excited.
That's huge. Well, one of the huge shows I know you have planned is Salute the Troops, which is, I think, just
about
10 days away, right? Who else is going to be there with you? This is a huge,
man,
some huge headlines.
Yeah. Snoop Dogg, right?
The man, Snoop Dogg, the myth, the legend. I love it.
Wu-Tang Clan is getting back together and doing some stuff. My buddy Tom Tran, he's a veteran comedian, because it's a music and a comedy festival. Tom Tran's going to be there. I'm really excited about seeing him live. Adam Carolla, Rob Riggle, some of the other comedians. Prince's old band is going to be there, and they're going to be playing. Yeah, right. Man, it's just such an awesome lineup. And the fact that they asked us to do it and they headlined us with those guys was just, man, what world am I living in, right?
Yeah. Well, congrats, by the way. I think it's absolutely awesome. Love Rob Riggle, by the way. And did I hear, Disco, is this right? What are we talking about? Does Prince have a new, obviously Prince is no longer with us, but is there a new album coming out with some of his unreleased music?
Eventually it will. Now it's just in the works. But after he passed, they said that he has enough songs to come out with albums. So they're going to possibly be doing that. So
I'm going to need you to make that happen.
Oh, okay. I'll stop everything right now and do it right now.
Please do. Please do. No, so awesome news, though, for you guys being on this and well-deserved. Love your music. You know, hopefully folks have caught the episode of Happy Hour where you guys appear and play several songs here in studio. It was just an awesome night, and the music really is great. But what's it for an event like this? What's it like, or what do you anticipate it being like being a veteran and being on the stage at something this big in front of that many people and surrounded by all those other, you know, very talented musicians like yourself?
Well, I think for me, the main thing is I kind of remember where I came from and where I was at before I kind of started playing music and started doing art. As a veteran, I want to be able to show other veterans that, hey, no matter how bad things look like they are, really neat stuff can still happen. You know, you can recover from almost anything.
Yeah.
And when I'm up there, I think about, first of all, I think about the guys I'm playing with, you know, and I don't think about anything but the music and the way that the emotions that the music makes me feel. As a veteran playing a veteran event, I just feel like I'm lucky, especially seeing, you know, some of my other friends and the things they're going through. And I just want to be an example for other veterans.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Well, and what a huge, you know, platform to do it on. Literally, you'll be on a platform, but it is a big platform for it to be done. And for you to share the music that you have and your story, which again, is a remarkable story of the struggles that you've dealt with, the events you've gone through, which I recommend people go back and watch that episode of Happy Hour, if not just for the music, to hear Hank's amazing story. But you've been on a big stage before. You did the inauguration, right? An inauguration concert.
Yeah, we played one of the inaugural balls. And I don't know if people know really how that works. When they do the inauguration, you know, it's a party all over DC.
Right.
And then they'll block off the part around the White House and say, you know, this is where the official inaugural balls were taking place. And that's where the Secret Service and the president can move freely through there. And we played the Veddies inaugural ball. And that was such an awesome experience. There was something about hearing the Star Spangled Banner playing when you're standing looking at the White House lawn. It sounded different than it's ever sounded in my life.
Yeah.
And you know, there were Medal of Honor winners there. There were general grade officers walking around. And for me, that was the first time I had gotten from being the military and the veteran into being, I guess, the entertainment side, to where, you know, generals are walking up to me, telling me their first name. And hey, thank you, sir. You know,
yeah.
I was far enough removed from it that it was easier to handle. And then we've got some other big stages coming up later this year too. But yeah, man, I don't know how this is happening. I just don't want it to stop.
Well, we hope it doesn't for you. I think that it's not going to. You know, when you've got remarkable people like yourself and very talented people like yourself, the music is great. You know, the rest of it's going to fall in line, and you guys are on the right track, which is great to see. Real quick, for go ahead. Do you have something?
I was going to tell you, I'm actually probably the least talented person in my band.
Well, the other guys are, Ian and John are awesome. But don't sell yourself short. you guys have a great trio. I mean, it's a great collective front that you guys bring, and the music is awesome, and it really is powerful too. The impact in some of the lyrics that you guys have that you've written there are just amazing. So again, I encourage people to check it out, and we'll tell people how to do that in a second. Real quick though, on the Salute to Troops, there's lots of big names there. You mentioned, you know, Snoop, Wu-Tang, mm-hmm. You've got Riggle, who's obviously on the comedian side. Is there anyone that, like, in particular that you're super excited to meet and be at the show with?
You know, I've been noticing a whole lot of Cheech and Chong likes on every one of the Salute the Troops, and they're going and commenting. So, like, you know me. I'm kind of hoping that one of them is around, you know. But as far as seeing performers, I got to say I think I'm more excited about seeing Tom live, because I've seen a lot of the stuff that he's done through the internet. You know, I've spent the night at his house, but I've never seen a live show. So I think that's probably the one I'm most excited about seeing. And he's a former paratrooper, Purple Heart guy. Yeah, I think it's probably Tom Tran.
That's awesome. And then real quick, for those who can't go to Salute the Troops for the show, is there any way that people can check out the music or support the cause?
Well, for the Salute the Troops stuff, if you go to salutethetroops.com, on the very bottom of it is a list of some of the sponsors, and all the sponsors are veterans organizations. It's a long list, so I don't want to start listing a whole bunch of them off and get them wrong. If you want to listen to our music, you can go pretty much anywhere that they play music digitally, Spotify, YouTube. We kind of push our Spotify stuff, and that's Three Beards. Our Twitter is at Three Beards. Instagram, Three Beards. You can keep up with us that way. And Facebook, I try to keep that up. Yeah.
That's it. I love it. Well, Hank, thanks so much for being here. Thanks for everything you're doing. We wish you the best. We'll be following you for sure, and we'll have you back, no doubt. Want to hear how Salute the Troops goes, but thanks for being here.
Can I say one thing before I go?
Please do.
I just wanted to mention that we're bringing to the show Julian Menchaca, who's retired military, and he's going to play drums for us. And then Harley Duggan in L.A., he's an Air Force veteran. He's going to play bass with us for this show.
I love it. I love it. Well, folks, if you're in that area or can get to that area, check out Salute the Troops. Go to the site, figure out how you can support that awesome cause of bringing everyone together to support the troops. And as always, go check out all of the different spots that you can find more information on social media, on Three Beards. Download their music, listen to it, and support the great work that they're doing. Hank, again, thanks for being here. We appreciate it, and we'll look forward to checking in with you here real soon.
Right on, man. I appreciate it.
You got it.
Talk to you again soon.
All right, on the other side of the break, we'll be joined by owner of Hill Farms New Mexico and good friend of the show, Jay Hill. Stick around. Welcome back, folks. Joining us now is a good friend of the show, owner of Hill Farms New Mexico, photographer, public speaker, Jay Hill. Jay, good to see you, man.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
Absolutely. So it's great having you. So I want to touch on a tweet that you sent out. You send out all kinds of awesome stuff on Instagram in terms of pictures, etc. But this tweet caught my eye, and it was from last month, or perhaps even longer than a month ago. But you said this. You said, "We live in a day where politicians take their advice from academia. While academia may have helped introduce some new technologies, usefulness and practicality are proven with boots on the ground. When shaping policies that affect the food supplier, let's talk to the boots." So let me ask this. How do you think academia or the great ivory tower is helping or hurting America's food supplies?
Think about it as far as climate change is concerned, in the fact that there are so many people that have radical ideas about what's happening with our climate, in a way that the climate's shifting. In all reality, 99.9% of the people that are drafting new policy like this, new Green Act, have never spent any time in the field actually providing food, fiber, fuel, animal feed for everybody else. And so it's really crazy for us to sit down and actually start to talk to people that have an opinion, because of course we're Americans now and we all have an opinion about anything and everything. But the biggest part about that is all these people are starting to draft new policies that are going to come into effect, which the EPA eventually will pick up and then slam down our throat, when in all reality, they're not getting any of their feedback from the people that are actually boots on the ground, like myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that kind of leads into my next question. You kind of answered it there, but in your opinion, do you think that America's small farmers even have a voice in agriculture or trade policies that actually affect, you know, folks like yourself?
You know, there's some really good, there's always awesome people like you that are willing to talk to a farmer. But at the same time, you know, we've got the American Farm Bureau and a couple other small entities that are out there that are trying to give us a voice. At the same time, there's no voice out there, you know, and the size of the American farmer is expanding rapidly. And everybody says, well, we want to provide and help sustain small agriculture and small farms. Well, the policy that you guys have helped write have forced us to become big farmers. And it's going to happen even more as you start to look at new policy. So our biggest thing is how can we impact people now to shape policy so that down the road we're not forced with all of these, you know, force majeures from EPA and other entities like that.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, the Green New Deal earlier, or alluded to it at least. I've had so much fun with it. It's literally the Christmas gift that just keeps on giving, because it's so ridiculous and entertaining. But when you saw that come out and you saw the 10 points on there and how basically there was no energy left and everyone's gonna eat grass until the end of time, what were your thoughts as a farmer? What just kind of, again, just kind of first thoughts across the bow, what came to your head?
Well, you know, there'd be a whole lot of censored that was coming out right when I read it. At the same time, if you're looking at, you know, our carbon footprint, you look at the amount of green matter that agriculture provides now with, you know, corn and soybeans and all these crazy crops that we grow all the way across the country. You know, we're absorbing so much of that carbon and actually putting it back into the earth. People don't understand what they're talking about. And then the fact that I'm probably going to have to stop feeding my Cole Pinto beans to my cows because I'm worried about them farting and burning a hole in the ozone layer. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
How did we get to a point in this country that we've become so polarized that the easiest person to pick on is the person that feeds you?
Exactly.
I'm still mind blown.
Yeah. I mean, and what do you do there? I mean, do you give, you change their diet. Do you give them Beano? Like, these poor cows, they're just doing what we all do and letting it rip. And somehow they're causing the end of mankind. 12 years, she said.
California's already seen the effects of it, you know, and it's one of those deals that, hey, pass all of these laws that you want, but get ready to shell out of your pocket, because for us to be able to produce it, we're not going to be able to afford to do it. Or you're going to eat food, you're going to have clothes that come from foreign countries, and you're not going to know what went into that. So either you get transparency from your American farmer and don't try to shove all these laws down our throat, or you can turn around and shove the laws down our throat and just not know where your food comes from.
Well, and so we've talked about this before, but what confuses me is that they do, and it's not just even the farming industry and agriculture, but they do shove these laws down people's throat, and yours in particular, yours being the farming community. But why do you think there is no group out there listening to the boots on the ground, listening to the farming and agricultural communities across this great country? Because it's clear, and I saw it even in Intel. Like, we're going to tell you how to do your operations in the field, even though we're not there and have never done operations. Okay. But the same thing happens everywhere. Why do you think that is when it comes to your craft?
Because there's so many people that are removed from it. If you look at the amount of people that are actually working in agriculture, the number is less. That's 1.68%. And then the actual food the people that are actually boots on the ground growing it is less than 1%. And so nobody really knows what happens to the food process and what happens to the food after it leaves our farm. And so what's happened is we have all these speculations about what goes on, and it scares the living snikes out of people about what happens with their food. And instead of saying, you know what, let's actually go in front of the farmers and find out what's going on. You know, are GMOs really bad? Are they killing us? Are they bad for the environment? Instead, they're just going to form an opinion and speak for us because there's not enough of us to actually speak on what we believe.
Yeah. Have there been, and, you know, if there's not a specific one, that's fine, but have there been, you know, individual politicians or groups or organizations that have stepped up and been strong advocates for you guys that have helped the community, or did you just fall on deaf ears?
No, we're starting to see some people that are actually, there's a couple of corporations, you know, larger companies. There's a new up and company, coming company called FBN Farmers Business Network. And there's a bunch of people that I guarantee you, if we sat down at a table and talked politics, we probably wouldn't agree on eye to eye. But when it comes to agriculture and when it comes to supporting the farmer, that company's kind of taking a look at merging tech to ag. And at the same time, it's going to make us more sustainable. And I think that's changing people's mind that might have been on the other side of the fence from ag, that we're saying, oh, if it's only organic, that's the only way we can eat it. It's actually saying, oh, we're going to run out of food if we don't actually start supporting our farmers. So there's those kind of companies that are doing, there's a lot of new startup tech companies that are looking at agriculture that want to help the farmer. At the same time, you know, we're going to continue to lose our voice. If it wasn't for guys like you and social media, I don't think we'd have a voice at all.
Yeah. Well, and social media, we all know we can be deplatformed any day. It'll probably happen to us soon. We'll try and send out.
I'll go down with you.
Communicate. Yeah, exactly. Well, it is. It's so important, and we're happy to. We love having you on. We love talking about this because it's so important. It's the backbone of America. I mean, this is so critical, and it's ridiculous that people don't take your wisdom and your thoughts and take them seriously, and instead just come up with their own ideas, as you mentioned earlier, and force them down everyone's throats. This policy needs to change. We hope that it will. We'll keep advocating for it here. In the meantime, we've got to run, but I can't wait to. We keep talking about it, and I'm not lying, even though we haven't done it. But we want to come out and check out everything you're doing out there. Maybe we'll bring some cameras. We'll definitely bring some whiskey. We'll just make it a good time.
Bring some guns too, because that's another intricate part of what we need.
Absolutely, we'll do it all. We'll do it all. Jay, thanks so much for being here.
Guys, thank you so much.
You got it. Big thanks to Jay again for being here. Also, Hank Barb earlier from Three Beards for swinging by. And then also to you guys, the audience, we really appreciate you hanging with us today. One more episode this week before we go on a short break. Katie Thulin and our good friend Josh Stretch Garrison will be here, so don't miss it. And remember, when it comes to your news and political commentary, experience matters. See you tomorrow.